hello again, everybody. Welcome back to the Tech Doctor Podcast. Nice to have you back listening again. Today we are going to talk with yet another Allison. We talked with Allison Sheridan last week from California, and today we have with us Allison Mervis, also from California. And Allison piqued my interest when she did a couple things that I've recently learned about that I was reading about on Twitter. We'll leave those as a surprise and get into them in a minute. But before we do that, Allison, thank you for being on the Tech Doctor Podcast, and take a minute to say hi and tell us a bit about yourself, if you will.
Thank you so much for having me, Robert. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. And hello, everyone. My name is Allison Mervis. I am totally blind, and I am originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I now live in Northern California, about 50 miles north of San Francisco. As far as my interests and background are concerned, I have a lot of different interests. I love reading, singing, technology, obviously. That's why I'm here. I have a master's degree in vocational rehabilitation counseling from the University of Pittsburgh. I have 2 years of experience as a voc rehab counselor in Pennsylvania, and I'm currently looking for work here in California. I'm really trying to focus on the human services and helping profession, but I'd also really love to hopefully find employment, perhaps in assistive technology, because that is my true passion.
Wow, you've done a lot of things and have background in varied areas. And is there any way to blend the human services interest and the technology interest as far as you're concerned?
I think most definitely there is. I have seen in other states, not so much in Pennsylvania, but I have seen in other states rehab counselors being assigned the role of kind of the assistive technology coordinator for a certain office. And that would be a role in which I really think that I would thrive, blending my love of counseling and helping people to achieve independence with my love of assistive tech. I think that that's totally possible, and I would love to explore that in a new job, definitely.
Well, I really hope that happens for you, and I think there's a tremendous need for rehabilitation professionals, counselors especially, who have extensive knowledge of technology. And I won't bore you with the gory details, but about 30 years ago when I did my PhD dissertation, what I actually did it on was I used a psychology model called the elaboration likelihood model to look at how rehab counselors go about making decisions when they select technology for their clients. And what I discovered was that it's about like the way people go about selecting toothpaste. They grab the bright blue tube that looks attractive on the shelf. Back in the day, when I was doing my dissertation, it's probably still more or less true today. Rehabilitation counselors, for the most part, actually made technology choices based on products that they were familiar with, the products that had done the best job of presenting themselves to them at conferences, and wasn't necessarily based on either knowledge of the technology or knowledge of what would be the best technical match for the client. So really, what we learned from that little study that I did was that, unfortunately, the majority of rehabilitation professionals aren't very prepared to make good recommendations. And I know there have been some improvements over the years. Certainly the technology's become more widely known, and certainly more states have implemented some sort of technology training facilities and labs to evaluate technology. But still, we need people like you who can live with a foot in both worlds. That's so important, I think.
Yes, it really is. And unfortunately, I think it is still kind of the case where counselors go with what they know, and often what they know is one or two products. I know at the office I worked at in Pennsylvania, I was kind of the go-to. Everybody would ask me questions about technology, and more often than not, they would come away having learned something new about a different device, about a different approach. I like to think that I kind of influenced in a positive way how technology expanded in that particular office, how the use of technology expanded in that office.
Well, I'm sort of the opinion, Allison, that in the last especially 5 to 8 years, access technology has really been shaken up, especially by the mainstream work that Apple has done, I think, with their products. And it's not all about Apple, but I think Apple has really made the consumer aware, as well as the AT technology companies aware, that mainstream can be made to be quite workable. And it really makes me wonder where that leaves specialized technology. I can argue that side of it. I can also argue the other side, that without some of the specialized technology that I use, like a Braille display and Braille note-taking devices, it would be much more difficult for me to attend the meetings that I have to attend for my job and give presentations and write reports and do the things that I do. So I don't know. What do you think? It seems like to me, we at the very least, we're kind of in flux right now.
I agree that we are kind of in flux. I think that we're moving more towards a marriage of mainstream and blindness-specific technology. I know I agree with you on both points, because I know that I, in the past, have used note takers and Braille displays, and I still use I'm hoping to actually get a new Braille display, but I'm using it coupled with mainstream technology. I have, you know, not only a Windows PC, but I have a Mac and an iPhone. And I often joke that I need to get the iPhone surgically implanted into my hand.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And so I definitely agree that we're seeing more of a marriage of mainstream and blindness specific technology. And I think that that's going to only continue as the technology continues to evolve. I think that dedicated devices like note takers will always have a place. However, for me personally, as soon as I get a Braille display, I believe I'm going to forego a note taker entirely and just use my iPhone. You know, I use the iPhone to accomplish tasks, not only the tasks that I would do on a regular note taker, like note taking and calendar and to some extent email and internet browsing, but I use the iPhone now to accomplish most of the tasks that I would also perform on a PC and to some extent the Mac, buying music, doing my online banking, Twitter, basically all of the things that I would do on a standard computer.
Yeah, I do the same thing, to be honest. I do so much of everything I do every day on my iPhone and certainly on my Mac. But you know, it's interesting though, if price wasn't a factor, and of course price is a factor, so I realize I'm out in La La Land even saying this, but but pretending for just a moment that price wasn't a factor, I still believe right now for me, the ideal solution is a note-taking device that can also double as a Braille display for my iPhone. And the reason that I say that is because I really like having the best of both worlds. It's so nice in a meeting to have the convenience of that built-in word processor, or even sometimes of that built-in web browser. And of course, to be able to easily switch over to the phone to use the web browser or the Notes app or Twitter on the phone or email also works. But if one can have the best, what I'm loving these days, I personally use the BrailleSense On Hand product from HIMSS, and it's an 18-cell device, so it's small, and it easily fits in the corner of my backpack, but it works great as both a Braille display device for the iPhone and as a standalone device when I want to use it that way. And so I realize that a big gotcha in all that is the price tag of those devices, and we can't really ignore that. But if we could find a way to make them affordable to people who need them, that seems to me at this moment in time, at least for me, is the best of both worlds.
That's definitely true. Something that I would really like to see improved in terms of accessing the iPhone with the Braille display, and it also in terms of entering data, is better grade 2 entry. Depending on which app I'm using, I noticed that I wasn't really able to enter grade 2 very quickly. There were a lot of back translation issues. What would be really great is if a specific Braille word processing application would be developed for the iPhone so that you could enter Braille as effectively as you might be able to in a on a dedicated note taker.
Yeah, it works pretty well, but it doesn't work as well as a dedicated device. It certainly works well enough to be very usable, in my opinion, especially with the current version of iOS. I think some huge improvements were made in the way Braille works, one of the main ones being that you can actually fully turn the back translation off if you just want to write in computer Braille. But yeah, I agree with you. There are some gotchas. Sometimes it's really hard to get an email address entered in a way that you know your email program will accept it, for example, when you're doing it in Braille. It can be a bit tricky to do some things like that.
Yeah, admittedly, it has been a little while since I tried Braille with iOS. I haven't had a Braille display in a while. I had to sell it when I was moving to California. So.
I can hear that.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the things that really got me interested in wanting to podcast with you is just your enthusiasm for the technology and your willingness to experiment with the technology. I think that's sort of what makes us all who listen to this podcast probably tingle a little bit in our fingers and our toes, the possibility of a new gadget or a new experience with some new software or hardware. And what kind of intrigued me was I saw a tweet where you were talking about how you had been experimenting a bit with an Android tablet, trying to make it accessible. Can you tell us a little bit about what your experience has been there with that?
As someone who is interested in finding employment in the assistive tech industry, I really try to keep up with all of the different facets of assistive tech and all of the different platforms that are out there. And one of the platforms that I really hadn't had an opportunity to explore to really any extent previously was Android, because I am a very happy iPhone user. And barring any major life-altering, technology-altering catastrophes, I don't ever see myself switching from the iPhone. I'm really happy with it. So I wanted to try to find an inexpensive means of trying out Android, both for my own personal edification and also to be able to hopefully train others one day on the Android OS. So when I read about what is called the Anol Novo 7, which is a $99 Android tablet, I was really excited. I thought this could be a really nice way for me, a person who's on a shoestring budget right now, to test out Android. I knew that when I first received the tablet, it wasn't going to have the ice cream sandwich update. So I knew that I was going to have to kind of wait on accessibility. My sighted friend and I did try to enable some accessibility back in Android 3.2, which is a version that came out before Ice Cream Sandwich. I ordered it from Hong Kong, so half the thing was in Chinese when I got it. So that was interesting. But we were able to get the Ice Cream Sandwich update installed, and unfortunately have yet to be able to enable any kind of accessibility on this particular tablet.
Sort of the best laid plans kind of went wrong. What did happen?
Well, what ended up happening was we went into settings and accessibility, and right when we went into accessibility, a nice little message popped up and said, install TalkBack from the Android Marketplace. So we hit OK. And then settings crashed and everything crashed and we had to restart the tablet. This happened a couple of different times. So being the resourceful person that I am, I thought, why don't we just go on over to the marketplace and try to search for TalkBack? There doesn't seem to be an official app for the marketplace on this particular tablet. There's something called Go Market, which in my ignorance of Android, I thought, oh, that must be the same thing. But when we tried to search for TalkBack and also Spiel, which is another Android accessibility app, we weren't able to find them. And we've just had a lot of issues with the various apps crashing. And I did some research and found out, I'm getting some conflicting reports, but the more prevalent report seems to be that this particular tablet is not endorsed by Google. And that's an issue because that limits the apps that can be installed on it. Obviously, that calls into question the authenticity of the version of Android that's running on it. Is it truly Ice Cream Sandwich, or is it some sort of weird hack job? So I have on Twitter and other media have really discouraged people at this point from purchasing this tablet. A friend of mine also purchased this tablet and actually installed some stock Android files to kind of fill in the gaps and make it more like a traditional Android tablet. But he unfortunately was not able to get accessibility implemented even after installing those files. I have them. Honest to goodness, I haven't gotten around to installing them because I figured if this person wasn't able to get it to work, I don't think that I'm going to have the Midas touch that will make it automatically work. So I'm really considering just giving these tablets to my sighted friend who had helped me out with trying to get it up and running because he has kids and they can play Angry Birds, and at least then it would go to some use.
Exactly.
Because I had actually ordered two tablets, one for me and one for my boyfriend, so I ended up shelling out a pretty significant amount of money just for this not to work. It's really frustrating, actually.
Well, you are where I have been, not yet with Android, and I may go there someday, but I have been many times where I would call on the bleeding edge.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're there, sometimes because the platform is pretty new and certainly relatively new as far as developing accessibility for it and so forth, it really kind of reminds me of where in some ways we were with Windows years and years ago. But at any rate, you're kind of like in the Wild West there, not quite knowing exactly what you're going to end up with when you buy such a tablet. And unfortunately for you, it hasn't worked out accessibility-wise, but it sure is frustrating on the one hand, but fun and exciting on the other to at least try something, to experiment in that way.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It hasn't altogether been a negative experience. I mean, I got to at least subscribe to some Android mailing list and just learn a little bit more about the OS in general. So I'm coming away from the experience with more knowledge than I had entering into it. So it's definitely not a complete waste. But yeah, this definitely taught me that sometimes when you're on the bleeding edge, you might cut yourself.
Yeah, you might actually bleed a little bit.
Yeah.
That's not good. That part certainly is not. And it's a shame that you spent the time, you know, and the money and the effort, and it didn't pay off. And that's really frustrating. And yet it seems like too often in one way or another that can happen in access technology, where either it doesn't pay off or it doesn't work out as well as we had imagined that it would. The environment, the options, the cost, all those things are going to continue to improve. It seems like we've made progress. There's no doubt about that. But
definitely.
We still have a ways to go, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I'm obviously a very biased Apple person, but they also have a ways to go in some of the implementations of accessibility that they're working on. And, you know, I guess in all honesty, it's always going to be a little more complicated to make a very visual device accessible to someone who's blind. There are always going to be wrinkles, it seems, that have to be smoothed out. And you really encountered that in a big way with this Android tablet, unfortunately.
I sure did, yeah. And I think if I hadn't got two of them and spent $200 instead of $100.
Yeah.
When you're unemployed, you know, $200 becomes a lot more than it is, you know, if you're bringing in money every 2 weeks or every month, you know. So I think that the money is the money that I spent kind of needlessly is the bigger disappointment right now. I'm disappointed in the lack of accessibility, but I think if it had been a little bit cheaper, I would have been able to kind of deal with the frustration a little better.
You could smile your way through that disappointment.
Yes.
A little more.
Yes.
So I gather from what you're saying that even before purchasing, you were only able to find out a limited amount of realistically whether or not this device would be accessible. So I'm gathering that there's still a lot of unanswered questions, a lot of undocumented how you go about accessibility in the Android arena right now.
I found that to be the case in the tablet market, not so much in the phone market. In the phone market, there's really a great wealth of information, thanks to websites like androidaccess.net, thanks to podcasts like That Android Show, just to name a few resources. I found that resources pertaining to phones are really quite plentiful. However, when it comes to the tablet market, it's really still kind of largely uncharted territory. And so I think that, the resources are slowly increasing, but there just aren't enough people who are able and have been able to get accessibility running on a tablet to really kind of put forth any kind of resources or research for anybody who might be considering a tablet.
Well, I know that there are a couple of at least tablet-like devices. I don't think I could really get away with calling them tablets, but there are at least a couple Android devices potentially on the horizon that will have Braille displays and functionality similar to what you might find in a tablet. You know, the APH is producing one, the American Printing House. I think they're going to call it the Braille Plus 18.
Yes, I'm looking forward to getting my hands on that one. I am.
Yeah, and there's also one being worked on that we've heard a little bit about from the National Braille Press.
Yes, I did read about that. I haven't seen anything recently, but I did read about that.
So at least a few companies are delving into this arena in the sense of trying to make a specialized accessible device running on the Android operating system. But we just haven't seen a lot of progress. It doesn't, at least not that I know about, as you're saying, in accessibility with the tablet market. It still seems to be mostly, if you want an accessible tablet, you pretty much have to look at the iPad.
Right. Another thing that you might want to think about if you really want to take Android for a test drive, I know that there is a Galaxy Nexus that is just an MP3 player type device, a PDA type device, if you will. It's not really a tablet. It is about the size of the Galaxy Nexus phone, but it doesn't have the phone features. And a couple of people I know are getting that, but it is more expensive. I think it was at least $200 at last time I price checked it. And that's just a little bit beyond my price range. And I would think a little bit beyond most people's price range who just kind of want to test drive Android.
And when you say an MP3-like device, does it have other features? I mean,
yes, I mean, from what I've been able to gather, it seems kind of like an Android equivalent of the iPod Touch.
Okay, so you would connect it to your Wi-Fi and use it that way, just minus the phone capabilities.
Yes, and that's something I have been considering. You know, once I get a job, that's something I definitely want to maybe look into getting, because I'm bound and determined to figure out how this whole Android thing works.
Yeah. Yeah, I might look at that myself, because I really don't have any desire for or need for a second phone, but to experiment with the operating system and to look at how you can access the various apps and how well they do or don't work with the accessibility screen readers that are available would maybe be worth looking at.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you know whether or not this particular device does work with the existing Android screen readers?
I do not know at this point, but I know that there were a couple of people on the Eyes Free mailing list, which is one of the Android mailing lists out there. It's excellent, who were looking into ordering it. I think that there might be a little bit more in terms of documentation and research that indicates that this might be a slightly more accessible device.
Okay, well, good. Maybe that will be something to keep in mind. And I honestly haven't had the time to get on any of the Android mailing list. I do try to listen to That Android Show from our friends over at saratalk.com if you want to check that one out.
Definitely. It's an awesome podcast, as are all the other Sarah Talk SPN podcast.
Yes, they are. They do a good job over there. Just celebrated their 10th birthday.
Yes, that's exciting.
That is exciting to be a 10-year-old. Couldn't couldn't we all enjoy that again for a while?
Life was so much simpler, wasn't it?
It was indeed. Well, it sounds like that not only you know, is it important for us to really try to monitor what other people are finding out, but if those of us who are interested in this area have a chance to experiment with a phone or a tablet or an Android device that we have word may be possibly accessible, it's really important to report that back. It sounds like really in a lot of ways, word of mouth, email lists, some podcasts are how this information is getting dispensed at this point. There's unfortunately not a lot of organized material that you can go to your local library or even on the internet, it doesn't sound like, and read about Android accessibility.
There really is a lot more organized information about Android than there would appear to be. But as far as information on the cutting edge about these types of devices, no, I think it's really more kind of piecemeal. You just kind of have to get the information kind of from where it is. As the Android tablets come more to the forefront, I'm hoping that there will be a more centralized repository for information regarding the accessibility or lack thereof of these tablets.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm really curious about is whether companies will try to develop tablets where the hardware is of really high quality, like the iPad is, or whether they will develop tablets that are less expensive and of lower quality, like we saw people go through with the netbook craze a few years ago. And I really wonder how that whole industry will evolve. And, you know, I hope that there really is good competition for the iPad. I mean, I think it's good for Apple and good for everybody if there are good competing products. But I also hope that the consumer doesn't get caught up in, you know, I bought this tablet and it saved me a bunch of money, but now I'm really unhappy with it because it's just not the quality that I hoped for. So I really wonder how all that's going to turn out.
Yeah, I hope that they do use, you know, as good a quality hardware as possible. I know I fell into the netbook trap. And at the time, it seemed like a really great investment. And it was a lot of time, you know, when I was doing more traveling between Pennsylvania and California, it was a great product because I was able to have, you know, very extended battery life. It is extremely portable. However, it's not really something that I can use every day for processor intensive tasks because it lags when you try to do anything beyond your basic email and browsing. And reading some reviews of the less expensive Android tablets, I've kind of seen that to be the case as well, especially with this Anol Novo 7 Basic that I have. I did, you know, after I'd purchased it, read some reviews where people weren't all that happy with the speed and performance.
Yeah, I think it's a jungle out there, right? You got to be careful, and you don't always.
They put the basic in Anol Novo 7 Basic.
Yeah, right, okay. And so you don't always know exactly what you're getting. So it helps if you can read as much and talk to as many people as you can and try to get information ahead of making that purchase.
Most definitely. And because I was such an early adopter of this tablet, when I was doing my research, there just wasn't a whole heck of a lot. And, you know, had I waited even really a few weeks to make the purchase, I could have saved myself a lot of money.
Yeah, but it is also true that one can wait forever. So you never know whether you have jumped at the right time or not. Only time tells whether you get proven, yes, that was a good move or not a good move, but welcome to life, right? I mean, that's how that's how it works in all kinds of areas that we delve into.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. Most definitely.
Well, I heard you say earlier that you are really happy with and joined at the hip or at the hand with your iPhone.
Yes.
But I also heard you mention at some point that you have jailbroken your phone. So what's that all about? You're not completely happy inside the Apple walled garden or what?
Yeah, the walled garden was getting a little constricted. I was getting a little claustrophobic.
Okay.
So, I had read off and on about jailbreaking, about all of the different things that you could do with jailbreaking. So I did some of my own research and found out, basically that jailbreaking your iPhone means removing a lot of the restrictions that Apple has placed on non-jailbroken iPhone users, or iOS device users, I should say, because any iOS device can be jailbroken. And basically, for me, the real benefit of jailbreaking was being able to install apps which, for whatever reason, weren't approved to be dispensed in the App Store. Through an application called Cydia that's installed on your phone when you jailbreak, you have access to literally billions of different apps that for whatever reason weren't approved. Now, of course, as with anything, accessibility varies, and I haven't tried all of them yet. So. But I find, at least for me, that jailbreaking, I kind of see it as sort of leveling the playing field in a lot of ways, as far as the difference between Apple and Android.
So for those of us who haven't tried it, how is a jailbroken iPhone different to operate than a standard iPhone? I mean, does it work any differently, or is it any different to use?
It really doesn't work any differently. Honestly, once you apply the jailbreak, and I've actually written a very comprehensive article on jailbreaking an iPhone 4S or iPad 2 that can be viewed at www.serotalk.com. They were kind enough to post my article to their blog.
Yes, I read and enjoyed that article.
Oh, thank you very much.
I recommend everybody checking that one out, because it gave me some insights into jailbreaking that I wasn't aware of.
Awesome. Well, yes, everybody, please check that out. But once you apply the jailbreak, other than having the Cydia app on your home screen, it really in almost every way behaves quite typically. There are a few little tiny things that I have noticed since I applied the jailbreak to my iPhone 4S, and this might depend on a number of factors. It might depend on some of the other apps that you have installed. It might depend on your specific device. But for example, sometimes when I go to unlock my phone, VoiceOver will randomly say YouTube for absolutely no reason. It's certainly nothing that is a deal breaker for me.
A little odd, though, huh?
It is a little strange, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a little strange. And also, I notice sometimes when I am in my last row of apps on page one of my home screen, where you find your settings, iTunes, App Store, it will make the little sound that indicates there's nothing on the screen, when actually, if you flick, you'll be able to flick to those apps. But if you're exploring by touch, it acts as though those apps are not there, which is just a little bit odd. But again, it's nothing you can't get around.
So maybe a few anomalies like that, but nothing real serious, it sounds like.
Right. Nothing that makes you unable to use the phone. One of the biggest benefits of jailbreaking for me has been some of the tweaks that you can install for Siri. Right now, as Siri stands, there are some things you can't do. You can't use Siri to launch apps on a non-jailbroken device. It was actually kind of funny. The one time I tried to get it to open iBooks, she said in this mournful voice, "I'm sorry, I can't do that for you. I'm sorry I let you down."
Yes.
I was like, no, really, it's okay. Since I jailbroke, I was able to install an app from the Cydia store called Extension Assistant, and that allows me to do any number of things with Siri, including launching apps, which is really cool, because my home screen is woefully disorganized. I have yet to put everything into folders. I feel kind of ashamed admitting that, but my apps are kind of scattered all over different pages of the home screen. So it's nice to just be able to say, launch iBooks, launch B of A for Bank of America, and just have it open.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's one of the real advantages that I've heard of jailbreaking is the fact that you can do more customization of the way you use your home screen. I mean, that's one example. Using Siri to launch apps is a great one, but I know you can also, there are some ways of adding some things to your home screen to make it more convenient, for example, to turn Bluetooth on and off or turn Wi-Fi on and off, things like that that are typically buried in the settings if you have the iPhone running in its standard operating system.
Yes, there are any number of tweaks that you can get. I just read about one today actually called Multitunes that allows you to sync your iTunes music library with multiple computers, which was always one of the biggest downfalls of iTunes for me was I have a couple of different computers and I kind of wanted to be able to sync with all of them. But when you have your iPhone in a standard configuration, you can only sync your iTunes music with one computer. So I really am looking forward to trying out this particular app. Now, of course, with the advent of iCloud, it's not as crucial to be able to do that, but I'm still, I use a combination of iCloud and the old-fashioned syncing method. I'm still kind of getting used to the idea of everything kind of being up in the cloud somewhere. So
I think we all are, and yeah. I haven't bought into Music Match yet, but I have a 64-gig iPhone, so I don't really have a need to have my music in the cloud at this point. Maybe someday I will. But, you know, I guess we should really point out to people that even though the term is jailbreaking, which sounds rather like something you might do in prison, it's not something that's illegal. It's legal to jailbreak, but it does violate your Apple warranty. That is, if you go to an Apple store with a jailbroken product, they're not required to provide warranty service on that product. So what you need to be able to do is essentially reinstall the standard operating system before you take your iOS device in for repair, if you have to do that, so that you're running the standard operating system. That, at least that's how I understand it. Is that your understanding as well?
Yes, you have it 100% correct. And it's really easy to reinstall the standard configuration of iOS if you need to take a jailbroken device in for repairs. All you do is you hook it up to the computer, you launch iTunes, you restore your device to factory defaults, and you are then running just a normal version of iOS, non-jailbroken.
I guess the only gotcha there would be if somehow your device got in such a state that it wouldn't connect with iTunes.
Yes, that would be an issue.
Then you would have a problem possibly getting Apple to honor the warranty. So that's something that once, you know, when you jailbreak, you do kind of step out on your own a bit in terms of being responsible for your device and also being responsible for the fact that if things don't work right or don't work as well as they did, it may be partially the result of jailbreaking, and you may decide that you need to return back to the regular operating system. But there are some real advantages to it as well, and it's up to each individual, of course, whether he or she wants to step into that arena or not. But it's certainly nice to learn something about it.
Yes, exactly. Jailbreaking is definitely not for everyone. I would say that you need to be pretty comfortable using your iOS device, and as I mentioned in the article, really comfortable with the mouse cursor on your Windows machine before you even attempt something like that. I would not recommend that somebody who is new to iOS mess around with jailbreaking until they've had time to really get used to the standard configuration. There aren't any operational differences, and yet because of the little foibles that you may encounter, it's just better to wait until you're really comfortable navigating the screen.
And also, the other thing about jailbreaking that people should be aware of is that it takes the developers who create these jailbreak possibilities a while to implement them after a new version of iOS comes out. So if you like to be a person who likes to stay up to the latest version of iOS, you probably, and your phone is jailbroken, you probably need to wait a while, because if you install the latest version of the iOS, that will unjailbreak your phone in the process.
Yes, it generally takes a few days to a few weeks for a new version, a new jailbroken version of iOS to be released. So if you're somebody who wants to keep up with all the latest features of the new iOS, then jailbreaking might not be for you. And that's okay.
Yeah, and it is nice, like you said earlier, that there is a choice. And if you want to do more experimenting than what is allowed by the standard Apple operating system, then this is a way to go about it. And in some ways, get the best of both, have the best of both worlds, and also the slight possibility of ending up in a world that creates some trouble for you. So you just have to weigh it out and decide if it's worth taking that chance. And honestly, I don't think jailbreaking is a huge risk. You know, it's very rare that I've ever heard of someone killing their device because they jailbroke it. But again, it's a good idea to wait and see if the next jailbreak is working well for people. I don't jailbreak my phone, but if I did, I wouldn't want to be the first person to try the brand new one when it comes out. I'd want to wait a couple of days and make sure that people aren't having big problems with it.
Yes, exactly. I did some serious research before I applied the jailbreak to my iPhone 4S. In this case, I was not as early an adopter as I was for the mournful Android tablet.
Ah, yes. Once that snake bites, we sort of step back and...
Yes.
Slow down a little bit, of course. That's just
definitely a once bitten, twice shy experience. That
that's how it works sometimes. I really wanted people to have a chance to get to know you a bit, Allison, and learn a little bit about both your Android experience and your jailbreak experience. And of course, I know you're in the middle of looking for jobs, and you have a lot going on out there. Is there anything that you would like to mention or share as we sort of bring this to a close here?
Yes, basically, I just want to thank you so much, Robert, for giving me the opportunity to come on the Tech Doctor podcast and to talk about my experiences a little bit. I also want to encourage anyone who wishes to get in contact with me to follow AllisonFM1985 on Twitter. That is AllisonN as in Nancy, FM as in Mike, 1985. If you look at my Twitter profile, you will also see a link to my resume. So if you are in a position to hire, and even if you're not, I encourage you to please take a look at my resume. And again, I just want to thank you for this opportunity. I've had a really great time.
Well, thank you, Allison. It's been really fun having you on the Tech Doctor, and I'm confident that we will do it again because this landscape is constantly changing, and I hope next time you can tell us all about a new job and no telling what all else you might be into by then. So it's been a pleasure having you here.
Well, thank you. I look forward to doing it again.
Yeah, and if you guys want to contact me, the best way to do that is to send an email to techdoctor123@gmail.com. Until next time, you all take care.